Network Automation Nerds Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Network Automation Nerds Podcast, a podcast about network automation, network engineering, Python, and many other technology topics. Today, I welcome back my friend Stuart Clark to talk about his personal journey. Spoiler alert, it's not a straight line. It's very interesting and very engaging. I learned a lot from Stu, and I hope you do as well. See you on the other side. So if you're watching the YouTube video today, you'll notice that I am back with my DevNet swag, my beanie and my shirt. That is because today on the show, we're talking again to my good friend, Stuart Clark, senior technical leader and developer advocate at Cisco. Today, we'll be talking about his personal journey, going from a non-technical career path to now a technical influencer interacting with thousands of developers and engineers on a daily basis. On a more personal note, I couldn't be more excited to have Stu on the show today. He's one of the most supportive people I've known, and he's not just shy about lending a hand when someone is in need. So in other words, he's perfect for the job of the developer advocate. So welcome, Stuart. Welcome to the show. Long time, no chat.
Yeah, thank you for having me on here, buddy. This is great.
Yeah, you know, I'm just kidding because I actually talk to Stuart quite a bit over on social media or whether, you know, whenever I could grab a piece of his mind, I'll do it because, you know, he's full of treasure. So, and then we're going to dive deeper and kind of just, you know, dive deep into more on the personal journey side versus if you heard the last episode about DevNet, that's great, but that's more on the technical side. So today we're going to, you know, kind of peel back the onion a little bit and see what we can find.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know we've talked about your background on the, and I will have a, you know, link in the show notes about the previous episode if they're interested in learning more about it. But, you know, for people who haven't heard about your personal story, can you tell us a little bit about your background, how'd you start it? Maybe a shorter version of it, but nonetheless, an overview. Yeah.
Sure, thank you, buddy. Yeah, so I started full-time employment when I was 16. I did have a part-time job before that after school. I used to work 2 hours after school from about the age of 14. My father instilled a very strong work ethic into me, you know, from a very, very young age. I started my career, did an apprenticeship in hairdressing and did 15, 16 years in hairdressing. And then decided I wanted to get into IT, into networking more specifically. I made that transition. It wasn't easy. It wasn't an easy transition to make. When you change careers or you make a big directional change within anything that you do, you know, sometimes you wonder if you've made the right decision. And I stuck it out. I stuck it out, and I worked my way through sort of like level one NOC, level two NOC, level three NOC. And then, you know, was fortunate enough to join Cisco with only about 4 years experience, you know, under my belt to join Cisco, working on one of their global networks, rebuilding part of their global networks was one of the first projects that I was on. And I did four years on that team. We went through different, you know, versions of that team, but, the core team kind of remained the same throughout. And then I was fortunate enough in 2017 to join DevNet, to get the opportunity to join DevNet, and so I moved teams at Cisco to join DevNet, and I've been with DevNet now, what will be now 4 years. This will be coming up to 4 years on DevNet.
Nice. Well, time flies because I mean, I remember meeting you at one of the earlier DevNets in 2019, and you've already worked in the industry for a while, but
yeah,
so. In case people missed it, you said you were a hairdresser for 14, 15 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, 14, 15 years.
Okay.
Great career. I really, really enjoyed it. I did a lot of really, really cool things, worked in a lot of great places, worked in a couple of different countries as well. Once I think highlight the career, top point of my career, I used to work in a very nice salon in London in Mayfair, which is a very exclusive area of London. Mm-hmm. And I did have somewhat of a celebrity clientele at the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and that was, you know, that was a real eye opener, you know, being a country boy, coming from a small town in England to go to to work in London in one of the biggest, you know, the biggest places, which is, you know, is kind of synonymous for, there's a lot of history there. A lot of those shops go back to sort of like as early as 1898 and 1895, you know, a lot of history around that part of the world, or not that part of London. And to be in those establishments and then, you know, to be seeing the people that you're seeing and being able to speak with people is just an amazing, amazing experience.
Yeah. So it sounds great. And so what made you wanted to change, right? Like, I mean, it sounds like a great experience, but yeah, ultimately you did change career. So what made you wanted to change?
There's a couple of things, I think. You know, I mean, I'd realized by the time I got to 30, I'd achieved every goal that I'd set out for myself within hairdressing. I'd worked over, I'd done a small amount of time in America. I'd been to New Zealand. I'd worked in, you know, some of the best establishments in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'd done that, and I'd checked that off. I guess at that stage, then you're kind of faced with a lot of people want to open their own business.
Right.
But that's a huge risk, a really, mm-hmm. really, really huge risk to, you know, to invest that kind of money in that. And, you know, within a small city that I was in, you know, now, even though the rents were, you know, they were reasonable, you know, you still had to have a good turnover of client, and running a business, very expensive. The competition is hard. It's very, very hard. I didn't know whether I wanted that responsibility of, you know, owning my own business at that age. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, maybe I'd like to try something different. You know, maybe I'd like to try something else. And you know, I'd had an interest in IT for quite a while.
Yeah.
And my father-in-law, he worked in IT. And, you know, he said to me, oh, you know, you ought to give a few looking. I was talking to him one Sunday, you know, when I was there for Sunday lunch. And he says to me, oh, you know, you've got such a fantastic memory. You know, you seem to be able to remember so much. You ought to give IT a go, you know. And I was sort of like, yeah, it's something I always enjoyed. I always enjoyed computers, and I was always fascinated by them. You know, and I always liked that kind. I always liked the kind of the computer-based films.
Right.
You know, I love watching those films, you know. Technology films and science films and things. I'd already like them, that kind of thing. And you know, he gave me a book to read from, and it was Todd Lammel's CCNA book. And he said to me, "You ought to give this a go because networking. This is where it is. This is where the future's at." I mean, this was a ginormous book, and you know, I've never been a big reader. You know, my mind gets distracted too quickly from reading. It really, really does. We were talking about this recently, about people who have a single focus and those people who like to multitask. It's quite a strange thing to talk about. I remember I was working at a hair salon in a city close by to where we live. And I was driving this car, and this car was like 15 years old. And the heater was stuck on hot, and it was the summertime.
Yeah,
the passenger side window didn't wind down. These, you know, back in the day, kids, we used to have to wind the windows down. You know, it wasn't electric.
Yes, kids,
you know?
Gather kids around the fireplace, and we'll talk about where we have to use the hand to wind down the window.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And it had a cassette player, so you might have to, Google that.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Google what a cassette, so no, I'm being funny.
I did too. So just for the record,
you did too.
Did, yeah.
Well, I didn't have an 8-track. It wasn't as old as that.
Oh, so, okay.
But you know, it's this car, and to say death trap of a car is an understatement. And I used to drive this car, like, it was like 50 miles there, 50 miles back. And I used to leave my home at sort of 6:30 in the morning, and then I'd leave the shop at, say, 6 or 6:30 at night, and sometimes it'd be a later night where we'd be open 7 or 8 at night. It was long, and sometimes I was doing 6 days a week because I wanted extra money.
Yeah,
you know. So, and like I said, I really enjoyed it. I had a great clientele. I built up a very regular clientele. I knew everybody by first name, and
right,
you know, it was, you know, you just had, you know, running conversations going with everybody, and you know, your regular clients. You check in, you know, how are the family, how's your work, you know, all of the small talk, and you were really involved in these people's lives, you know,
right,
to, you know, people who, you know, they were leaving university or they're starting the first job or they were establishing their job, and you saw them going through different stages of their lives. Because I was at the shop for 5 years.
Right.
And, you know, and you meet someone and then, he's, you know, someone says to you, oh, you know, hey, I've started dating this girl. And then 3 years later, it's kind of like, hey, do you want to, can you cut my hair for the wedding? You know, and hey, do you want to come to the wedding?
Right.
And you're like, there.
Can you cut my baby's hair?
That has happened. That's, I mean, happened. You've got, all of a sudden, you've got three generations.
Right.
You know, coming, you know, in the door. And it was hard. Very hard. I had a lot of money in debt, into the tens of thousands into debt. This is just accumulated through bad decisions of buying rubbish cars mostly. And
the one with the hand wheel I have wrote the cassette player.
Yeah, so with the cassette player. Yeah, I spent all the money on cassettes. We were struggling financially. We were really struggling financially. And there were days where I'd only eat probably one meal a day, you know, and that'd be, you know, late at night or something. And, you know, my car was literally running on fumes every day.
Right.
And you know what it's like when you're in this, when you're in a financial hole like that, you can't see a way out.
Right.
You know, the interest, you know, on the money you owe is almost how much you earn. And there just seems to be no turn left. So I found myself working harder, working more hours just to stay on top of everything. And I remember this day vividly. It was a Saturday and it was just at the end of the summertime. And I was having a kind of a Coke or soda just outside the shop. And I was sat there in the sun and I'd started that morning at around 7:30. I was due to finish at 5.
Yeah.
And I got a full day. My appointments had been booked. You know, I had client back on back on back on back on back all the way through, you know, working a 30-minute slot every 30 minutes, you know, you've got with a client. And then one of my clients cancelled. I went to the reception desk and they said, oh, by the way, your next client's called. He's stuck in traffic. He's not coming in, so he's rescheduled.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay. So I thought, well, I'm just going to sit outside in the sunshine, you know. So I sat outside and sat outside the shop with this thing. And I saw the manager of the shop was talking to the owner, and the owner had this beautiful Bentley GT Continental.
Right.
And that was when the Bentley Continental had just come out, the W12 had just come out. And he was talking, and that was one of many of his cars. He had a lot of nice cars, and he owned the building. He owned the building and he owned the business.
Right.
He was talking to the manager, and the manager was showing him this his new Rolex, because the manager had the Rolex watches.
Right.
And I'm looking at them and I'm looking at me holding this can of soda.
Right.
And I'm thinking, I'm the busiest person in the business.
Right.
I was taking probably twice, three times as much, you know, client-wise, financial, money-wise,
right,
in the till as everybody else. And you work on commission. So obviously the more, you know, the more you earn, the more, you know, commission you get.
Right.
And I looked at this situation and I thought, something doesn't add up here. I mean, my nurse is killing me. My hands are killing me. I'm tired. Yeah. I've got no money.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't all just down to the fact that I was in the wrong position. Yes, I've made a lot of bad choices. I got myself in this position, but I wanted to get myself out of this position and I didn't know how. And when I went back to my car, to take the drive home, I saw that book on the passenger seat my father-in-law had given me.
Yeah.
And I thought, right, this is where I'm going to have to take ownership. This is where I am going to have to stop making excuses.
Yeah.
You know, if I want something new, if I want something different, I'm going to have to do something different.
Right.
So as if that isn't enough pressure, right? As if that isn't enough pressure. Bombshell moment. My wife and I discovered that she's pregnant.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you're on another level of sort of like, you know, pressure put on top of you. And you just think, I'm going to be a father now. We're going to be parents here.
Yeah.
I really have to go extreme here with this.
Right.
And so, I mean, that was the kind of, I guess that was the moment for me, you know, where I decided, you know, I'm going to dedicate serious time to this. I'm going to start creating good habits. I'm going to start, you know, doing things, you know, to move me out of this situation, to move us out of this situation. I'm going right. to, these are the, you know, the steps I was going to, these are the steps. And I plotted it out. I planned it out. You know, I started to then do research on companies, started to, you know, as well as studying, find out what kind of jobs I could get into, you know, where the gaps were in the market, who the companies were, all of these things right. in preparation for that day where I was going to pass my certification. And I was going to, I had it in my mind, get my certification, Cisco CCNA, get my certification and start this new career and then just, you know, ascend, you know, just start really going for it within this industry.
Yeah, that's a great story. I mean, to begin with, and I too, you know, didn't grow up with a lot of money. In fact, you know, there's always food on the table, but and yeah. clothes to be wear. But that's it, right? So I decided to major in college on finance because I was wondering, you know, we're not bad people. We work really hard, but why don't we have any money? Right. Like, why do we have to like compare to others? So I could totally identify with that story. And of course, you mentioned you're at a certain stage in life and you find out your wife was pregnant. I remember, you know, when I was about to become a father, and that was just in itself such a stressful experience and mentally just take a drain. I couldn't imagine what you were going through with those, you know, they just kind of compound each other. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they do, but sometimes you know you need a why. You do you do need a why, and you know for you know like you were saying, you know for me becoming knowing that I was going to become a father, and was very very important to me because you know I mentioned about my father had given me the strong work ethic. My father casts a huge shadow, a really huge shadow. You know, I've always said, and I said, you know, when we found out my wife was pregnant, I used to, you know, if I could be half the father my dad was to me, then, you know, I would be so happy. I mean, he worked three jobs, you know, for his family when I was growing up. And so you do what you have to do for your family. And so, you know, I think that was really my moment. And if I needed that kind of swift kick in the rear, mm-hmm. to move me in that direction, that was it.
That's interesting. So, okay, so you have this revelation that you want to make more money. You want to, that was a great quote, by the way. I think I should cut that and do a clickbait, right? If you want something different, you got to do something different. So,
yeah,
cool. And so now you had the moment, you had Todd's book sitting right next to you. It's about like, what, a gazillion pages, roughly, give or take?
Oh, yeah. It was huge. It's like, you know, it's the CCNA is not an easy exam, you know, for anybody that's taken that. But, you know, the amount of topics that's in there. And, you know, Todd does, I know Todd personally now. I know him from reading his book. You know, he became, you know, a very, very dear friend.
Sure.
You know, and I got to meet him and say thank you to him in person, you know, for that book, because it really did change things for me. Yeah. And you know, I carried that book around. I mean, it was, you know, I went everywhere with that book. I never put that book down. I mean, I went cover to cover with that book twice, you know, to help me, to get me, prepare me for that exam. And those other resources as well that was in there as well, you know, back in the day with like Packet Tracer kind of coming along and stuff, doing that, getting the hands-on experience and things. And there was a Cisco Press hands-on CCNA book where you could go and you could do, you know, I went from writing all of the commands out in a notebook to, you know, using a simulator.
Oh, wow.
You know, for, you know, to that. So, you know, in the Packet Tracer kind of idea, to make that, you make that jump, you know, to get the necessary hands-on experience as well.
Right.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hi, I'm Esprit Devora. I created Women in Tech so listeners could walk away feeling, if she can do it, so can I.
I do not have an inclination if I will succeed at this, but I have nothing that will hold me back.
It's not anything new that women are here. It's new that we're hearing our stories.
I'm afraid of doing, but I'm too curious not to do it.
You have a lot more power than you probably think you do. You got this.
Subscribe to Women in Tech wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, so I remember hearing stories about like Russian computer scientists where the terminal is a scarce resource, right? So not everybody has a computer at home. They have to share a terminal, but they would start doing calculations or coding in their mind in notebook, and that actually enhanced their ability to logic it out, because when you're writing, it's very different than when you're typing something in. So you kind of refresh that. Yeah. Yes. So I want to go back a little bit. So you have Todd's book, and you mentioned, you read it inside out, but there's got to be still some gap between the time that you decided to do it versus you got your CCNA and work your way to a tier three support staff, right? Mm-hmm. So how did that experience go? Like what was the challenge of it? How did you do it? What was your mindset? What was most important to get you through that process? You mentioned habits. I imagine that's one of them.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, habits are good. Spending time, as much time as you can, going through your book. And to your point, writing things down really helped me. Writing chapters out from the book, writing down all of these things, because it clicks. You're committing it into a different part of your memory when you are, writing things down, and that was really important. I mean, leading up to the exam, first time I took the exam, failed. Because I'd never been in that environment before.
Yeah.
Never been in that. There's multiple choices, going through stuff. I'd never been in that, but I'd never been in an environment. There's this clock ticking down in the corner. And everybody would give me advice. I was in the Cisco community, CLN, at that point, asking questions about, various things that I was struggling with, concepts and a Todd's forum. I was on Todd's forum. Todd was helping me. I know a few of his experts were in his forum were helping me as well with, bits you didn't understand and comparisons and bits and pieces. But nothing prepares you for that first exam experience. And you go in there, I actually completed all the questions. There was no problem completing the questions. I just failed miserably. And I didn't fail by a lot either. I think the passing score is was in the sort of like the mid 80s. And I think I was in the mid to late 70s. So I knew I was close.
Right.
But that, coming from that non-technical background, that non-real world experience, and being first time in the exam, nerds probably got the better of me, and then probably rushed through some of the questions. Took the exam again, failed again. Mm-hmm. So it's you come out of those situations and you're like, but you've got to get back on the horse again. You've got to come out there, and it's. I'm a big fan of Rocky. Anybody that's seen me, I quite quote Rocky, and Rocky says, it's not how hard you can hit, it's how hard you can get hit and get up and keep moving forward. And that's it. You're going to fail. And this was me tasting failure, really me tasting failure. But I was close. I knew I was close. I just needed that little bit extra. So the third time, I was lucky. I went to a different test center because the test center couldn't put me in.
I drove to this
other test center, and the test center was at Leicester, and it was right in the center of Leicester in England, and it was above some shops. It was just a doorway in a test center above the shops, and I went in there to take the exam, and I passed, and I came out of that, and I remember putting on my backpack, my rucksack, and my hoodie, because you have to take all those off when you're in an exam. So you're coming out there, and you're kind of getting dressed out on the street, getting all your phone back in your pocket and stuff.
Right.
And I remember coming out of there, and at the time I was watching, there's a Will Smith film.
Like the ID4 or Independence Day?
No.
I remember the movie
of The Stockbroker.
Yes. Yeah, it's based on a true story too. And he's with his son.
It is based on a true story.
And he became homeless for a little bit. Yeah, we'll find out the movie name. Yeah. But yeah, the listener will be like shouting at the top of their lung, go, "It is!" And then we just don't know. Yeah, it's just exactly right. But I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the one of that. And when he becomes a stockbroker and he gets offered the job, he walks down the steps and you see the tears coming out of his face. Right. And he's got his hands in the air. It's exactly what I did. When I came out of that test center, there was tears down my face. And I was just walking through the streets just sort of like this, you know, arms in the air.
Yeah.
I mean, absolute. And then I got in my car and I'm a big fan of Alter Bridge and Mark Tremonti and Miles Kennedy. And, you know, the predecessor band to that, which was called Creed, that had Scott Staples singer. And I was listening to a lot of Creed as well, because Creed was, you know, that music and Alter Bridge, I found it very, very motivating.
Yeah.
There's a lot of motivation in there for me. And I remember putting that on. I remember driving just you know, back from Leicester, from this test center, just being, you know, just so happy, just thinking, you know, because all of this work that you've done to get you through that. But that was, you know, if I'd have known then, I guess it's that thing that if you know then what you know now, it's kind of like, for me, that was the beginning and it was the door beginning to open, but nothing could have prepared me for what was about to come after that.
Oh, okay. So I found the movie's name, so because it's going to bug me until the end. So it's Pursuit of Happiness.
Thank you, The Pursuit of Happiness.
Yes,
thank
you. And I can imagine you doing the Will Smith and the Rocky, you know, climbing the mountain, on top of the world and raising your hand, that type of stuff.
Absolutely.
No, that's a great story. So you went ahead, you did your bits, you did not pass two times, and finally the third time you passed. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned did not prepare you for what was about to happen. So you know, I know we're all dying of suspense here. So what happened, sir?
So you know, you got the certification. Now you want to put it into practice.
Sure.
Now you want to break into this, you know, you want to break into this industry.
Yeah, you want to get a job and make the bucks that you were promised, right?
Yeah, you want to get into the industry. You want to start exploring this, you know, this is a career. And you know, I thought that the certification, I thought that would be the hard part. And then afterwards, you know, there'd be people begging me to come and work for them. And we know it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I guess that didn't happen.
That didn't happen. Even if I could get an interview with no experience, it was difficult, you know, to get the interview. And then when I got the interview, I mean, I just got beat up at the interviews. You know, some of the questions, you know, completely different mindset from what I was used to. You know, I could get through some of the questions, but it was hard. That bit was becoming hard. And you become kind of disheartened a little bit after being rejected, you know, time after time after time, whether it's phone interview, face-to-face interview, you know, at that point, I'm still burning through what little money I have to drive to different places to be interviewed, taking time out of my job because I'm on commission. I'm losing money, you know, by doing this and going to these interviews.
Right.
Just, you know, hoping that this is the right one, that one of these things, but, you know, you kind of, once you start knocking on those doors, you know, one of them eventually is going to give, you know. And I had a few really nice folks in my corner saying, you know, that's fine. Something will crack. You'll get the opportunity. Just keep pushing, keep applying. You know, there's a lot of opportunity out here. You'll find the one. And then, you know, eventually that did happen, you know, went into the right place. The knock manager came out. Wonderful guy, I'm still friends with today. David Ballard, his name is. Wonderful, wonderful man. You know, came out, shook my hand and sat down and said, you know, why the change? And I told him. And he said to me, you know, okay. And I had a really good chat with him. Just a really nice chat with him. He didn't beat me up with questions. I just asked me questions and things. And he just said to me, okay. He said, I'll be in touch. And he shook my hand and he went, I'll see you soon, Stuart. And I kind of came out of there thinking, what a great feeling, you know, what a really, really great feeling. And then, you know, got the call from the recruiter, said, you know, he wants to hire you. I was just, you know, champion, top of the world then.
You're playing Rocky music in the background.
Yeah, Rocky music's playing in the background. I'm running up the stairs, he said to me, can you start in 2 weeks? I said, well, my wife's about to give birth. So I said, can I start after that? So, you know, I left my current job, finished on the Saturday. And what's actually ironic is about talking to you now about this.
Yeah.
It's actually our son's 13th birthday tomorrow.
That's, oh, wow.
14th of October. So for the 13th, this actual day would be the day, would have been my 13th of October in 2008, mm-hmm. would be the final day that I was a hairdresser, this very day.
Right.
In 2008, 13 years
ago.
Wow. And then, you know, our son came into the world and 2 weeks later I started a new career.
Nice.
So,
yeah. So, well, you know, happy birthday to Stu's son. We'll all sing a happy birthday to him privately. Yeah. But that's amazing, right? So I would say I've been to my fair of interviews in my life. And sometimes you get a good feeling afterwards. You know, you kind of just click. And I myself was, you know, gone through, kind of the loop for other people as well. And you kind of change your perspective if you do enough. Yeah. Is that you want to hire people with the capacity to learn versus you want to hire people with more so than existing technology. So, you know, you got to have a baseline, of course.
Yep.
The person's got to do the job. Mm-hmm. But more importantly is the attitude and also, how have you overcome some of the challenges that you have. And obviously you have overcome your share of challenges. So I'm glad David was able to see that and gave you a chance. And of course, obviously you took off in like a rocket. So you got the job at the Knock. You started working, your son was born. Mm. Obviously that was pretty stressful at the time, but take us through that process of just progressing through your career from there.
It's, it's a strange thing going from the career that I went from where, you know, you're working in the hair salon and people are coming in and they're paying to see you and they're happy to see you.
They're telling you their life stories too, right? It's a therapy session for them.
You go and work on a Knock and then all of a sudden this phone rings and there's someone yelling at you.
they don't call you to congratulate you on such a great product you have created.
And you know what? That's exactly what Dave said to me, because there was a couple of times in the Knock. I mean, he saw that it was taking it out of me and he took me out for a coffee a couple of times. You know, we went out and, to get something to eat or something. And he said to me, you know what, Stu? He goes, look, people aren't going to call us to tell us how great they are. You know, that's not going to happen, you know, and that really made me think. And I thought, you know what? He's right. And it made me think of a book that I read a long time ago, called The Magic of Thinking Big. I think it's by Dr. David Schwartz. And he talks about this ownership of business. Imagine yourself as the owner. And he talks a lot about this, about ownership. And he tells a story as well about a man who was at a train station going to buy a ticket. And the person that was in front of him was talking to, you know, the person giving the tickets out of the train station, the ticket sales. And they were yelling at them and shouting at them and cursing at them. And the man behind the counter was being very calm, very cool, very collective, trying to help this, you know, man out with his, whatever his problem was, whether he missed a train or some issue with the tickets. He remained thoroughly calm, you know, throughout this man shouting at him. And then the man obviously, you know, got what he needed and walked away.
Yeah.
And then as the second man approached the counter, the gentleman behind taking the tickets took a sip of his water and looked up, big smiling face, and said, hello, can I help you? To this man who had witnessed all the shouting.
Right.
And the man said to him, you know, you handled that extremely well. And the man selling the tickets said, he's probably a really nice guy, but he's, you know, circumstances, he's missed the train, which might affect his business, which, you know, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
So I can't be upset with him because I don't know what's going on in his life. This is obviously, you know, him missing a train, or, you know, his travel not going right, is going to have some implication on his life. That's right. He's not taken out on me. That isn't a personal thing. And that really, you know, when Dave said that to me, it really made me think, because that person who's calling me at the knock is probably being yelled at by his boss, who's being yelled at by his customers.
Right.
Or this chain of events.
Yeah.
It's not personal.
Right.
It isn't personal. Their business is depending on you. You know, so it's not good to shout at people. I never raise my voice or shout at anybody in customer support. I never do that for that very, very same reason. But the, you know, listening to what that customer has to say, let them get it off their chest.
Right.
And that's one thing I learned in hairdressing is, you know, from customers coming in the shop who, you know, weren't happy or for whatever reason. If someone's unhappy, let them finish. Never interrupt them. Let them get it off their chest. Keep good eye contact. Let them finish what they're saying. And then, and I took that approach. I took Dave's advice. And then, you know, it just became, nobody likes being shouted at, but it didn't affect me emotionally as what it had been doing.
Mm.
You know, and that was a bridge to overcome, a real bridge to overcome. You know, and that's why, you know, I had doubts at that point, you know, do I want to go back to start cutting hair? Because I don't want people yelling at me.
That's funny. Yeah. So I too worked in, oh, by the way, so it's called the magic of thinking big,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So we'll have that in the show notes, but if you're watching the video, you know, I have it on the, it's by Dr. I guess it's Dr. David Schwartz.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So that's fantastic, right? So I worked in the NOC as well. It's a hard job.
It is hard.
And especially if you're a tier 3, like you were, that you're the last, you're, like the buck stops here, right? You got to solve this. They're not going to talk to the engineer on the back end who actually wrote the code or the bug. But so, you know, it's a hard job and you don't really get appreciative notes. I mean, once in a while you get, but, but you know, I think the survey response was somewhere in the low 2%. Which was, you know, and half of the time is, you know, complaints too as well. But it's a hard job, and you know, I'm glad you corrected correct your mindset. You read that book, and you went ahead with it. So that's one of the tools that you use, right? Like to kind of put yourself in different perspective, or like you want to elaborate that a little bit.
Yeah, it's just putting yourself in that, you know, in the customer perspective, but as well as, and this is, you know, and I'm learning this all the time.
Right.
You know, still learning this all the time. And there's a great piece which was written by Laura Hogan, which was about having your Amiga hijacked. And that's a fantastic piece, a really fantastic piece, which was written. And it talked about how you react in certain situations, that fight or flight situation. And how the brain responds and how you respond, and essentially how, you know, in situations, it's how you respond is that's what makes that situation, because you can, you know, someone can come to you with a problem and you can either be relaxed and calm about it and deal with it that way, or you can be aggressive. But really it's that 10% of how you react to a situation determines that situation. And you know, like I said, I'm still really learning this now, because, you know, there's times when, you know, my Amiga gets hijacked, you know, especially when you're working, you're kind of heads down into something, you're really busy with something. And then some, you know, somebody rushes at you with something. And, you know, you have to think very quickly. And it's learning to be able to deal with that in those situations is how to react in different situations.
Yeah.
And it does depend. It depends, you know, on, you know, the nature of the job. And there are a few other things you can take into consideration. Each job is, you know, naturally different. And, you know, it's, but what we're doing in IT when we're, you know, writing with code and stuff, someone said to me once, this isn't open heart surgery. No. So, you know, someone is saying now.
Yeah.
But now is different. You know, now is different to that of a, you know, a heart surgeon, a brain surgeon, a paramedic. you know, that kind of thing. There's a big difference.
But yeah, unless you work in the hospitality yeah. hospital, and you know the network that actually the hospital, like the, you know, the doctors depends on to yeah. to actually offer it. But anyways, I hear what you're saying, and yeah. I'm the same way. So I don't know if you've seen the meme that has the person, you know, like a little note in his back said, "Don't talk to me because I have no self-control. If you talk to me, I'll be chatting you with 2 hours and have, you know, I can't get anything done." But yeah, definitely, you know, it's, and I get irritated for people who interrupt you, but like you said, it's all about the mindset, you know, how you react to it is more important. It's almost like people saying, you know, every single hardware is going to fail. So they mm-hmm. don't blame the vendor for having hardware that, you know, crash or having bugs. It's how they respond to it. So same thing mm-hmm. as you were saying, yeah. is just, you know, you nobody has a perfect temper, no. but it's how you react to that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I learned that a lot at Cisco as well, is that, you know, hardware is going to fail.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be power outages. We all experience those. And I think really, especially when you're providing a customer with a service as well, the customer will understand that because they've faced it as well. You know,
yeah.
we've all faced hardware failures, you know, not just within a network, you know, things fail, you know, engines fail, you know, services fail. I mean, at some point, something does stop working, and we have as much redundancy as we can in place for failure. But at some point, something is going to break. Customers understand this. People understand that, you know, a light bulb will stop working.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. Where they are really going to be critical is how quickly can you replace that light bulb?
Right.
And during that replacement, is the information that you give them to say, we are aware of this failure. We are working on it now. And one thing I learned when I started doing and dealing with a lot of outages, and I led a lot of what we call tiger teams, you know, when there's an outage and I was,
right.
you know, we've got an outage, I'm going to take point now for the network team. I'm going to be the SME for the network team. The network team are going to fix it, but I'm going to let them do all the typing. I'm just going to take the updates from them and provide that to our manager, and they're going to provide it to the customer
mm-hmm.
and to give, you know, regular updates throughout this to say, we're working on this. I'm going to provide you with an update in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And that update is going to go out. Whether that update is, we're still working on this, we expect the fix to this to be at, you know, 1 p.m. or 2 p.m., as long as you're keeping your customers informed, good news or bad news, you know, they're not going to be happy about that, but they're going to be confident that you're working on a resolution. The worst thing you can ever do is provide no information, go completely silent on them and leave people just going, I don't know what's going on.
Right.
You know, even if you had, and you'll have experienced this as well, and so will so many other people, you know, you say to someone, oh, this is going to take an hour to fix. And then, you know, you might be relying on remote hands getting to the data center and they can't find the cage, which adds 10 more minutes, which adds 20 minutes.
Right.
Go back to the customer and say, we're still working on this, but this is going to take a little bit longer. That's fine. If you don't tell them that you're going to be extending the outage window or this is going to keep going, they're going to get upset. So
right.
communicate.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Do you want to change the world? Former Tesla executive turned podcaster Billy Samoa is on a mission to help you do it. His show Inside Out reveals transformational insights that can literally change your life. If you're a change maker who wants to make an impact while you're on this planet, then this is the podcast for you. Through deep dive interviews with the world's most remarkable people, your mind will be filled with new ideas and perspectives that will give you the secrets you need to make your mark. Go to insightoutshow.com or subscribe to Inside Out on your favorite podcast platform.
Yeah, so that's a great point about, you know, communication and being transparent and honest about everything you're doing, because you know, if you put yourself in their shoe, like what you were saying, you know, there are people breathing down their neck, and you know, they're under a lot of stress as well. Back to that empathy thing you talked about. So that kind of training probably prepare you well for joining the DevNet as a developer advocate. So how did you, you know, get this opportunity, and how did you prepare yourself for it, and what are the lessons you've learned? So much to unpack there. So let's start from the beginning. How did you, you know, transition from the knock job into a or tech support job into DevNet?
When I started, at Cisco, that was pretty much my role, was a project engineer. I was brought in on a 3-month contract just to roll out some new services, including IPv6, which meant a lot of hardware upgrades, a lot of image upgrades. And then, you know, a lot of configuration, and that's all I was focused on.
Right.
You know, so it was one of the first times that I wasn't involved in troubleshooting. I wasn't involved in any form of ticket handling or anything. I had my job. I had X amount of time to do this in. I had to plan it, execute on it, and you know, deliver this in this point of time. It wasn't until I finished the contract side, and then I started with Cisco as a blue badge on the, because I did contracting for Cisco for 9 months. And then I moved on to a blue badge, which would have been 28th of January, 2013.
Right.
And that's when I started getting involved in handling and working with other teams, and also dealing with the customers as well.
Right.
So other teams are making service requests for ads, moves, changes, removal of service, help troubleshooting issues when it's, you know, when they think the network might be causing slowdown or some kind of interference to applications and services. That's when I started working on this side. At that kind of time as well, we were then tasked with rebuilding this global footprint which Cisco had for one of the major services which Cisco sold. And so I was able to then step in to help out with some of the tasks, and the team was still kind of small.
Right.
And so we kind of carved it down into, you know, the architecture, the design, the traffic flow, deployment, working, testing, these pieces. But what happened for us when we started doing this, building this new service, was we started off with the first site in London. And then the second site that we built was in Frankfurt. And then the site after that was in Secaucus. Now, the London site had like gone through the alpha testing with customers and gone through the beta testing.
Yeah.
And then we'd built the site in Frankfurt, which had just gone straight to beta customers.
Sure.
When then we started building Secaucus, this was just, we should have been in the position where, because we'd done the alpha and the beta, when we went, Secaucus went live, we were just going to cut all of the old traffic from our old Secaucus data center to the new traffic in the Secaucus data center.
Okay.
Yeah. Seamless cut over. And this was, for us, this was just as simple as taking our IP addresses and advertising them from a different location, you know, to, so the customers wouldn't know any different. The traffic, BGP would do its magic, ISPs would do their magic.
Sure.
We were just cut over. We told them we were making the change. They were fully aware it was taken. You know,
so it's an active setup.
Active setup. Yeah, exactly.
You just hot code. Yeah.
Yep. Sweet. Flip it straight over. No problem. and we know we've done this with some success.
Yeah.
In the other sites, we've done this with some success. What we found was, is that we started to get configuration drift between sites.
Right.
Because by the time we come to roll Secaucus out, this was 3 months after we'd made London live, and we'd gone through all of the teething with London, and then we'd deployed Frankfurt, but then we'd made changes to Frankfurt and also made changes to London, but we hadn't updated some of those new changes. And this was just mostly internal servicing and reporting and graphing, internal, you know, internal sort of like, you know, east to west kind of traffic that we got flowing.
Right.
Because as the other teams had spun up their services, the DevOps team, the monitoring team, the SRE team had spun up all their services, they'd put on additional services to meet customer demand and customer requests on the alpha and the beta.
Right.
So we made Secaucus live, and then all of a sudden, some of the features aren't working.
Oh,
and
my God.
The SRE team are saying, well, we built these VMs and they're not reporting. It's like, well, those VLANs don't exist there. This routing doesn't exist there. These ACLs don't exist there.
Sure.
We've got all these pieces of history. We started to get config drift.
Yes.
Now, this is what happens when you're keeping all of your configurations in a text file.
So, and emails. You know,
and emails, you know, and you're trying to do the best you can with, you know, keeping this up to date. But let's face it, there's very, very few people in the world who can eyeball 2,000 lines of ACLs from a firewall, you know.
Right, right.
And, you know, then you're talking multi-context firewalls as well.
And the correlation between line 1,094 to, yep, like to line 50 because they, you, yep, know, different objects.
Yep, 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 yep. All the way through, all of these problems. And this is when we started to think, okay, you know, we were building our templates with CMDB,
yeah,
but we weren't deploying them in this way as well. So then we started to look more at how we could do this as an automated thing, how we could use source control as automation. And this is where, you know, automation started to really come into play here, yeah, being able to build automation through variables and templates through source code, and then have this single source of truth. So it's not, I'm not the one with the most up to date text file on my machine, and I'm on holiday, and you know you're doing a deployment, and
right,
the text file that you have is stale, it is not up to date, and you're having to comb through all of this stuff to be able to, you know, to get it right, and then you're probably doing a comparison to the other site and all of these things. So we started looking at automation. And I thought at that point, okay, this is, you know, going to have to start learning automation now.
Right.
You know,
right. Yeah, another jump.
Another jump, you know, and this is, you know, you're starting to, but this was a big jump for me. This wasn't like me learning, you know, I started off with, you know, regular IOS, and then, which was the same across pretty much all of the hardware that I was on at the time.
Right.
And then I made the jump into learning XE, and then learning the jump into XR and Nexus. Learning new technologies as well, which come along with that, you know, segment routing, MPLS, you know,
sure,
within Nexus VDC, you're learning these technologies which are, you know, per platform, and, you know, you're applying them. And we've all done this, you know, throughout, you know, you're learning these things up. Automation is something completely different. It's, you know, all of a sudden there's, it's like going completely to another land,
yeah,
and not being able to understand the language being spoken,
sure,
at all.
Sure, it's, that's a good comparison.
It is really difficult, really, really, really difficult.
Yeah.
And so Cisco's always evolving, you know. It's always growing, and Cisco acquires companies, and, you know, Cisco acquired the OpenDNS company, and our two teams got to work together now.
Yeah.
The team at OpenDNS, when they come into Cisco, and I said this once before, you know, we were starting our automation journey on this team, and it was going quite nicely.
Yeah.
You know? The OpenDNS team came in, and it's kind of like, the only way you can describe it is, it's like an alien ship landing and you're still doing cave paintings.
I'm sure they're very flattered to hear this, but that's funny.
I'd said this before, you know,
yeah.
I think that team, when they first heard me say that, they just really laughed. But, you know, they were doing a lot of really cool things with automation, a lot of cool things. So there was a lot of lessons learned here. So, but what I found was that I was trying to brute force something that I couldn't brute force. Now, mm-hmm, normally I would brute force, you know, learning some Cisco technologies with a few documents here, a few,
right,
examples. Okay, I can get this to work. You know, oh, okay, this is how VDC works. You know,
right,
this is how multi-context works on ASA. You can just go through this. You know, brute force learning Python, I found that extremely difficult. Really, really, really difficult. And I was working with it every day, you know, and adding things in and, like, you know, moving things around within code. And I got some good mentors behind me showing me, you know, how they would do things. Or if something was new, they would show me, but I didn't understand the fundamentals.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the fundamentals here.
It's almost as if you're copy and pasting a config versus understanding the config, meaning of the config
exactly,
behind it.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, so I started to look. And this is, it's just funny because a lot of this kind of happened very, very quickly in that I was at a children's party with our son. And we're in one of these places, which is like, they've got a bounce house and they've got all this climbing stuff. And there's like 200 kids going crazy. And I just thought, I thought, I'm not on Twitter. I'm going to join Twitter.
Okay.
I'm going to join Twitter. And sure. You can probably see it on my timeline, don't it? So this is when I joined Twitter. But then I joined Twitter and I started following some people at Cisco. And I started following people I knew. I mean, this would be like people like, you know, who are, you know, big names in the industry, Jason Gooley,
sure.
Denise Fishburne, you know, Scott Morris, you know, all of these people who are just icons to me, icons
sure.
within the industry. And then, you know, that's the, you know, the list goes on. And then I came across DevNet on there. I think Hank was one of the first people I followed.
Yeah. And Hank and Preston, that's who you're
Hank
talking
Preston.
About.
Yeah, yeah, I'm talking about you, Hank Preston, whose birthday it is today, actually. So
happy birthday. Yeah.
Oh, it's also Jason Gooley's birthday today as well.
What? Do all the network developer, net devops need to born in October or something?
Well, I think that's all the repo is cloned.
Oh, you know so, what? Yes, I think you're right. Yeah, so you follow all these people with 200 screaming kids in the background.
Yeah, 200 screaming kids. And, you know, came across DevNet. And what was interesting was, you know, I was, oh, DevNet, Cisco. Well, it's interesting, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't fully understand how DevNet worked. And what was funny is I then, you know, joined DevNet.
Yeah.
I've actually seen my original account because I'm an admin now on DevNet. I can actually see my Gmail address because I registered with my first Gmail address. And I can see the labs that I've completed as well, or did complete back in,
yeah.
you know, back in. So this would have been around 2016, I want to say, sort of around 2016, coming on to 2017.
Yeah.
And I started learning a lot, you know, about network automation from there as well. You know, certain things like, you know, using NetConf, consuming APIs. I did the, like the ambassador program for Teams, for WebEx.
Yeah.
As well. You know, making calls into rooms with that. I did that as well, which was super fun. And I started, you know, tweeting about the DevNet.
Yeah.
And somebody on DevNet messaged me one day to say, you know, hey, someone was talking about you in our meeting. our VP was talking about you in the meeting. And I was sort of like, well, wow. And I joined a couple of hangouts and things like that.
Sure.
You know, and then I'd been on those and I was tweeting about them and I was just loving this. I just thought, this is so cool. You know, there's all of this great content on here and it really helps me build the journey that I want to go on. It's
right.
giving me everything. And it's real great because I was actually learning things on DevNet that I was actually putting into production. I was learning things and putting them into production. So it was helping me in my day job so much at the same time. And I'm going through this, and then I was speaking with somebody, and I actually found out that I knew somebody on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a couple of inquiries, and so, you know, I thought, oh, I really want to join this team. You know, I really want to join this team.
Right.
And so I reached out to them. Our director at the time was Mandy Whaley, and I reached out to Mandy and said, you know, can I have a chat with you? And she said, yeah, you know, I'd love to chat with you, and, you know, thank you for all these really kind tweets and things. It's like, oh, yeah, great.
Right.
And I had a chat with her and she said to me, and I said, look, I'm going to just cut to the chase. You know, I'd like the opportunity to join your team.
Right.
You know, I'd like to become an advocate. I really would. And she said, well, we don't really have anything right now. So, why don't you come back? And you know, we'll talk soon. I was like, yeah, I'd love to. And, you know, you can get involved in here. And then, about 3, 4, 5 months later, somebody left the team and a spot came open.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and of course, you just say, "Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I want to join, right?" Or did you jump?
Yeah. I was like, I thought about it for a couple of days.
Yeah, right. For like 1 second or so, yeah, give or take.
I thought about it, and they asked me to do a recording, like a presentation.
Sure.
You know, so I, you know, when they asked me on the Wednesday and I said, well, when do you need this by? And they said, oh, the Friday. It's like, okay. So anyway, I just, you know, I've got some pieces that I've been working on, you know, just some test stuff that I did. And, you know, I did that. And, you know, I met some people on the team. And I thought to myself, I've done well, but I don't think I've quite got it yet. I don't think I've quite got enough experience. But the thing that I've always said about jobs is don't apply for jobs that you can do right now. Apply for jobs that you can do in the future. Even if you've just got 50% of the skill now, you know, as long as you can show that, like you were talking about, that growth, that willingness to learn,
right?
Then, you know, anybody can learn technology. There's so many resources out there now. What you cannot learn is dedication, desire, and passion. They come from here. This is who you are as a person. And if you have those things, then you can achieve anything. You can, you know, you can learn something because you can build those habits. You can take in that information, and you can learn anything. And I'm a big believer in that. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm sat here, exactly here, on a Thursday, and then all of a sudden, you know, I get a message, and it was the recruiter's name, and he said to me, "Hey, Stuart, have you got a couple of minutes?" I was like, "Oh, here we go. Here's the bad news." And I am thinking, "Here's the bad news." I am thinking the bad news. And he says that, you know, Mandy would like to offer you the job.
Mm, nice.
And he went, you know, the chat went quiet for a little bit. And he put, "Hello, are you still there?"
So you pick yourself off the ground. And, you know.
Yeah. I pick myself off the ground, and I'm like, wow. You know, I'm just like, yeah, you know, it's, I know I'm going to be taking on a lot. I'm going to be doing, this is a big jump. You know, right. This is another big jump for me, and I haven't done such a big jump since, you know, I came to Cisco in 2012.
Yeah.
So this was a really huge step, and I knew I was going to be, you know, working in an area where there's an awful amount of knowledge. You know, some really knowledgeable people, some really big names, you know, within the industry.
Right.
With all of that, and then, you know, remember the first day of just, you know, starting on this, and it just, you know, one day at a time, one step at a time, just, you know, you just build up, you know, right. And you keep working at it, keep chipping away at doing, you know, doing this, and make mistakes, learn from your mistakes, move forward, get knocked down, get back up, move forward.
Like Rocky, or?
Yeah, just like Rocky. And it's, you know, I have always thought of myself as the underdog, because I didn't have a college or university degree or anything. I came from a trade background.
Yeah.
You know, you know, everybody has different things they need to overcome. You know, everybody has challenges, and to everybody, those challenges seem like Mount Everest, and they're minded. At the time, and you know, you eventually overcome them. Sometimes it takes a week, sometimes it takes a month, sometimes it takes years, you know, to get over that. And you know, when it does, you know, you get, you know, that experience, you know, from that, and then it enables you when you are faced against the next Everest with some kind of confidence to think, well, I overcame that, I did this.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to tackle this. Like, you know, the first time speaking on behalf of DevNet, you know, at Cisco Live. I mean, you know me, and you know, people obviously heard me talk a lot here. They, you know, I can really talk. Get up in front of an audience at Cisco Live, and then all of a sudden, you know, like, you just can't form words.
Yeah.
You can't form words. And no matter how hard you try,
yeah,
the words just won't leave your mouth. And there's all of these people just stuck there looking at you going,
Yeah. They're like, we paid top dollars for this. So what's this?
Yeah.
No, but I think there's a important things to unpack there, right? Like you mentioned, you had a growth mindset, right? Like you were always thinking that you could, things could be learned and things could be, you know, you might take you years or weeks, but it could be learned. So that's growth mindset. And you were always, and you mentioned you were broadcasting your thoughts out, even though they may not be as, you know, quote unquote, big named or, they're your thoughts, right? They're whatever they are your own and you own mm-hmm. them and you broadcast them out. So that, therefore, they get you noticed by the VPs and director, by Mandy, who they know. And also you're aggressive in seeking out those opportunity, the opportunity that you want, right? They may not have an opening now, but because you were, have a growth mindset, you were able to, you know, do your deliberate practice on, you know, all these stretch, like you mentioned the labs that you've done, stretching your knowledge, and you were able to achieve that. But, you know, part of it is opportunity, sure, but they're there for people who are ready. And the people who are ready are the ones who pursue their, you know, pursuit of happiness, right? Pursue your dreams mm-hmm. and also have the right mindset and have the practice. So
yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, Stu, this is a great origin story, right? Like, so I think we talked about, and you talk in other places briefly mm-hmm. about, you know, how you get to things are happening after DevNet, but we never heard about, you know, kind of the long version of how you came about mm-hmm. the mindset change and all mm-hmm. of that. So I want to thank you for sharing those thoughts. I mean, those are really inspiring for me to, you know, kind of keep at it and doing this podcast, for example, right? Like, you know, I'm just starting out and, you know, I'm just seeking out, trying to work the workflow, but just one step at a time, one step forward. Yeah. And, you know, you being a friend of mine. So I'm glad you're sharing these with our audience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're like I said, every time I talk to you, I feel like we could talk for hours, but we're hitting up an hour here. So I want to, again, thank you for being on the show multiple times. And I want to ask, so if people want to find you on the internet, on social, where's the best place to reach you at?
Like you said, I'm very active on Twitter. You can find me on there, sat in a boat. and then I've got Dimebag behind me. I'm a guitar player in my spare time, and I've always really been a big
that's a good picture.
Yeah, thank you, buddy. Yeah, I've been a big metal fan for years. I grew up on this. Grew up with, you know, Sam. My father was a huge Sabbath disciple. Grew up on this kind of music. I've played guitar for a number of years. So yeah, Dimebag's there watching over me.
Nice.
Yeah, so yeah, really active on Twitter. My LinkedIn profile's on there as well. I write a lot of blogs as well. You can see mm-hmm. that I've written a number of blogs as well. I think now for DevNet, I've written close to 60 blogs, which is just, you know, is pretty big now.
Yeah.
Written a few blogs, and I'd like to take the opportunity to people, you know, for people to for continually reading them. You know, we do a lot of analytics on DevNet, and I've been super lucky to have, you know, people always interested in reading what I'm, you know, writing about, whether that's SD-WAN or NSO or, you know, Python methodologies or bits and pieces, you know, related to upcoming events or things that we've got launching on DevNet. I enjoy writing blogs as well for DevNet. It's really cool.
Nice. And I read about you have an upcoming book. Isn't that right?
Yeah. So that's one for the bucket list. you know, yeah. Something thank you, buddy. Something that I wanted to do, you know, and I mean, you have an awesome book as well. And
thanks.
It was a great book to read, pick up and get it. You see yourself, you know, in the industry writing the books, and I think, yeah, I know, I'd really like to do that as well. Like yourself and a lot of other people admire, you know, within the industry who have given back to people through, you know, various mediums, and one of those being able to author a book. So that was always the one of those things that I always wanted to do. And then, you know, the opportunity came along. I was originally down as a tech reviewer for this book. And then one of the authors had work commitments and couldn't do it.
Right.
And one of the co-authors who's with me on the book, the lead co-author, should I say, he messaged me and said, hey, how would you like an upgrade? My director, Eric Thiel, had mentioned to him as well, he knew him. And he said, you know, oh, yeah, Stuart's interested in writing. And they knew I was involved as a tech, you know, thing, but they knew it was also something I wanted to do. And then, so yeah, I upgraded to author. And then there's, you know, that's another thing, you know, writing blogs, that's cool. Writing, you know, scripts for, you know, presentations, writing internal articles. I mean, I've written a million RCAs. Millions of exaggeration. I've written, you know,
give or take
one or two. I know I've written a bunch of CLCAs. I've written so many internal documents. Writing a book.
Yeah.
And I don't know about your experience with this. I'm writing a book, and there's, I mean, I'm going into, you know, your territory, a legend territory, with all of these great people who have written so much.
I think you're talking about somebody else.
I'm talking about your book.
All right, cool.
There's all of these, you know, the people and things. And I'm sat there and I'm thinking, how am I going to do this? And I just remembered that thing. It's sort of like, you know, something else that I constantly talk about: consistency, consistency, consistency.
Right.
So 30 minutes, an hour a day, I got up. That early time in the morning, because I get up early.
Yeah.
Got my coffee, sat down, headphones on, put myself in the zone, and just did to start with, I did 30 minutes every day. Then I increased that to built up a little bit to an hour. And every day I did that. And then before you know it, I've got 65 pages. I've got 25,000 words. I've got this chapter.
Right.
So I've worked my way through it. And it's, again, it's that, just that. One day at a time, one step at a time.
Yeah,
you know, work through it and stuff. I mean, I'm nervous. I mean, I really am. I really am nervous. But you know, the co-authors have read through some of it and they've said, yeah, this is good. You know, submit it. You know, there's a few more steps. Yeah, it's got to go by, you know, grammar review. It's got to go by several technical reviews. It has to go through legal. It has to go through all of these things. I know there's going to be bits where they'll ask me to rewrite paragraphs, they'll re-ask me to do sentences. I'll get, can you explain this in more detail? That's going to come back to me. But yeah, I think final cutoff, I think, is the end of the year. But I've submitted the chapters.
That's the hard part.
They're now down for review. So yeah,
no, it's great. I mean, speaking from own personal experience, right? So it's really a team effort, but it's also a solo process, right? Like you said, you know, you just keep consistent at it. You just keep doing it. And then the team gets involved and they're all for the betterment of the book. So, you know, we've gone through a lot. So besides, get a copy of Stu's book and get involved in developer.cisco.com on DevNet. Any other call to action before we end the call here, or get grow a beard. I know I can, but you know.
grow a beard. No, this is it. Just get involved. Start projects. Start collaborating with people who you wouldn't necessarily collaborate with. Ask questions. Experiment with stuff just all the time, because you never know what you're going to uncover, you know, by getting involved in all of these things. Go outside of your comfort zone. Get outside of your comfort zone, because that's where, for me, outside of the comfort zone, that's where the magic happens. Mm-hmm. When you're under pressure, when, you know, you're nervous about something, that's when all of the good stuff starts to really, 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 you know, come to life. and just go out there and start doing things like that. But I mean, I loved it. Now I love putting myself in uncomfortable positions.
Yeah,
I absolutely just really love it now. It's just really funny. Putting yourself in that, and that's when it's. I like that. I really like that, and I think that is the days of being the underdog. Yeah. Being the underdog and working way up. I love being on that. You know, I'm faced with a challenge right now where something that I've been working on for the last like year has been going extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden it reached a point where it's just gone completely sideways.
Mm.
And I'm speaking with my manager, I'm speaking with my leadership, and we're saying, what do we need to do to get this back on track? What do we need to get this project back on, to get this back on track?
Yeah.
There is a real part of me that now is looking at this going, great, I've got a chance to rebuild this once again.
Right, right, right.
I've got a chance. I did this 2 years ago. I mm-hmm. built this from completely nothing into what it is today.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting to do it all over again. And the bits that I wanted to do all of that time ago, the lessons learned, I'm going to build it right now. This is my chance to rebuild, and I'm going to rebuild this, and I'm going to rebuild it so good. My manager's looking at me again, you really want to take on all that problem? I'm like, yeah, yeah, right. I just all want right. to do it. I want nice. To rebuild.
I'm looking forward to you rebuilding it, and I'm ready to have my face melt when when I see it so awesome and just like, oh my God, that's cool. Yeah. So the call to action was get out of your comfort zone.
Get out of your comfort zone.
Follow Stu on Twitter and let him know what kind of comfort zone you have gotten out of and what you accomplished. Yeah. So Stu, thanks again for being on the show. I really appreciate it. It's really, really inspiring. I know it inspired me, and I hope, the audience got something out of it as well.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time, Mike. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. So once again, thanks for listening to the Network Automation Nerds podcast today. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other podcast platforms. Until next time, bye-bye.